Before we get started with today's episode of Morbidology, I'd like to take a second and talk about one of my favourite true crime podcasts, Killer Queens, a true crime podcast. Join sisters Tarella and Tori as they chat about true crime cases sprinkled with killer 90s references. They don't investigate the cases, but say out loud what you've always been thinking. Be sure to search for and subscribe to Killer Queens, a true crime podcast, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever else you're listening.
Hey y'all, this is Tarella
and Tori from Killer Queens, a true crime podcast.
If you're anything like us, you can't get enough true crime and you're always looking for your next show to binge.
That sounds like you, then we would love for you to check out our show. We're sisters who have been fascinated with true crime since we were in high school watching marathons of Snapped, Cold Case Files, and American Justice with our dad.
We also infuse our love of the 90s, which is the best decade if you ask us, and obscure movie and TV quotes into the cases we cover.
Our listeners say that it feels just like talking about a case with your best friends. It's light, sassy, fun, but always respectful.
And we ask the hard questions like, how did human garbage Casey Anthony really get a not guilty verdict? I mean, does she have beer-flavored nipples or something?
Who killed JonBenet Ramsey?
And we know you can be underwhelmed and you can be overwhelmed, but can you ever just be whelmed?
All really good questions.
And we just did the whole obscure movie quotes because we did 10 Things I Hate About You twice just in this promo.
So if you like a lighter take on your true crime discussions with some witty banter and southern accents mixed in, find Killer Queens wherever you listen to podcasts.
Lilas!
Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join me weekly as I uncover some of the world's most heinous murders. Bristol is a city in England that prides itself on being one of Britain's most tolerant and forward-thinking communities. However, a brutal murder of a disabled man in 2013 left the area recoiling in horror, even more so when it was uncovered that the murder had been the result of institutional racism, a vicious rumour mill, vigilante justice, and a misguided police investigation. Bijan Ebrahimi was a 44-year-old Iranian national. He had been born in Iran in 1969, and in 1981, his mother had a stroke which left her paralysed. In 1991, she passed away, and the following year, Bijan's father was diagnosed with cancer. Bijan became his carer until he passed away a few years later. Witnessing the death of both of his parents at such a young age made Bijan come to realise how precious life was, as well as how fragile it could be. In 2001, Bijan moved to Britain and started attending college with the aim of going to university. While living in Iran, there had been a revolution which meant that universities were closed for 2 years. And while Bijan's siblings all went to university in Iran, Bijan didn't get the opportunity. Over in Britain, he completed diplomas in plumbing and carpentry and studied a foundation course in IT. As his sister said, Bijan always had a hunger for education. In 2013, he lived alone in a ground floor apartment in Capgrave Crescent, Brislington, an area in Bristol. He had arrived at the estate in 2008. Bijan had lived on the streets for a while before moving into a halfway house for the homeless in 2006. While there, however, he had been subjected to a vicious attack by two other residents and had sustained back and head injuries. He had also been scalded with boiling hot water. After the attack, Bijan was moved into a council flat in the south of the city, but the two men who had attacked him tracked him down and tried to set fire to his house. This attack caused the softly spoken Bijan to slip into a state of hopelessness. Afterwards, he was moved to Capgrave Crescent. Two of the greatest joys in Bijan's life were gardening and his tabby cat, who he named Mushi. In the little plot of land outside his apartment, Bijan planted a number of beautiful flowers in pots and baskets, and truly took pride in his garden. In fact, Bijan rarely left his apartment other than to tend to his garden. Bijan was intellectually disabled, and a severe back injury had left him physically disabled and unable to work. While Bijan had massive hopes and dreams of getting a degree and a successful career, sadly, Bijan's life didn't turn out that way. Over the course of 2013, Bijan's garden had been vandalised on several occasions. Then on the 11th of July 2013, Bijan looked out of the window to see the culprits mid-action. He grabbed his camera and took several photographs of the youths as they destroyed his garden. Afterwards, he called police to complain about the damage to his garden as well as harassment. Before this incident, Bijan had called police a number of times to report the damage caused to his garden and to report harassment from his neighbours. Iranian and disabled, Bijan looked out of place in the predominantly white council estate, and despite the fact he kept to himself, he had found himself the victim of relentless bullying at the hands of his neighbours. As his family said, words such as foreigner and cockroach were hurled at Bijan as he walked to the bus stop or as he watered his plants. There was only one person who actually got to know Bijan. He asked to remain anonymous, but said that he had met Bijan at a local bus stop and coaxed conversation out of him. As Bijan began to trust the man, he would pop over to his apartment for a cup of tea around once a week. Bijan confided in his friend that he had been having trouble with his neighbours and said that he felt intimidated by them. The apartments in Capgrave Crescent were quite run down, and it was a dodgy area, rife with drug abuse and antisocial behaviour. As one local named Roy Blake said, problem tenants were constantly moved in and then moved out by the council. Bijan had intended on handing the photographs over to the police as evidence. Instead, however, his neighbour, 24-year-old Lee James, had spotted Bijan with his camera and told the neighbours that Bijan had been taking inappropriate photographs of their children. Lee had moved into the council estate just a couple of months beforehand and was known as a hot-headed, heavy drinker who was partial to a line of cocaine or two, especially when drinking. After spotting Bijan with his camera, Lee burst into Bijan's apartment with a can of beer in one hand and started shouting abuse at him and threatening him.
Hey, yes. That's a f***ing warning, right? You get up here, all you want. Get up here and I'll say to him, you're taking pictures of me. How old are you? I'm a little boy.
Go.
Up to you.
Go out of my house.
Get the f*** away with the f***ing pictures,
Lee,
right?
Go out of Lee. My house.
Lee.
Trust
Lee.
Me, take pictures of me again and I'll f*** you up.
Lee, are you listening to me? Look.
At one point he shouts, take pictures of me and I'll f*** you up. Bijan can be heard shouting at Lee to get out of his house, while a woman can be seen trying to drag Lee away. When Lee accused Bijan of taking photographs of children, he knew that this accusation was guaranteed to provoke a hysterical reaction. Around 20 neighbours congregated outside and started to harass Bijan and call him a paedophile. When police arrived, instead of investigating the damage or questioning any of the neighbours, they instead arrested Bijan on suspicion of breaching the peace. As he was led away from the apartments, the residents chanted, "Pedo" at him. The fact that Bijan was the one to be arrested gave his tormentors the illusion of victory. At the police station, however, it was determined that Bijan had not been taking inappropriate photographs of children, but instead had been taking pictures of youths who had been vandalising his prized garden, like he had claimed. Furthermore, an examination of his computer found no evidence of anything suspicious or inappropriate. Bijan was released without charge. Sadly, however, the rumours had already begun to circulate around the area that Bijan was a paedophile. There was no evidence that Bijan had been doing anything inappropriate or illegal, but seemingly this didn't satisfy the majority of his neighbours. And when he returned home, feelings in the community were running abnormally high. As one neighbour who didn't want to be identified said, "There were about 20 people out there all having a say. They had him down as a 100% paedophile. When the police took him away, everyone was cheering. Then he got released back into that." As police dropped Bijan home, he was met by the same chants as before. However, the police did nothing to dispel the rumours and just drove off as Bijan went back into his apartment. There were two neighbours in particular that were furious by the fact that Bijan had been released without charge. 24-year-old Stephen Norley and Lee James, the one who had first claimed that Bijan was inappropriately photographing children. In the space of just a few days, hatred had spread like wildfire throughout the estate, and derogatory comments were spread across Facebook. In the early morning hours of the 14th of July 2013, Bijan went outside to water his plants, thinking that it was safe to do so. Lee, however, saw Bijan outside of his apartment and unleashed a brutal attack on him. He punched and kicked Bijan before stamping on his head several times. According to one neighbour, they had heard Lee shouting, "Have some of that." With the help of Stephen, Lee dragged Bijan outside to a garden outside a small block of flats on Whitmore Avenue, around 100 metres away from his own apartment. Stephen then ran back to his own apartment to fetch some white spirit, which was then used to douse Bijan before he was set on fire while lying on the grass. The brutal murder was witnessed by three teenagers who had been camping on a nearby patch of grass. They heard the screams for help and could smell the burning flesh. After committing the murder, Lee returned to his apartment and bragged to his girlfriend, "We sorted him out for you. Tell the girls I did it for them. He's been burnt." Shortly thereafter, police arrived at Lee's apartment. When he opened the door, he stated, "I bet this is about that fucking pedo." During questioning, Lee accepted that he had kicked Bijan 4 or 5 times, like a football, and stated, "I had so much anger in me." The following day, Lee and Stephen appeared before Bristol Magistrates Court and were charged with the murder of Bijan. Neither entered a plea and both looked eerily calm and cavalier. As the two men were being led from the courtroom, one man in the public gallery shouted to Stephen, "Keep your chin up, I'll get you out." They were both remanded in custody until the 8th of August, when they would appear back in court for a preliminary hearing. As is protocol, when somebody dies following recent police contact, the case was referred to the Independent Police Complaints Commission. The role of the police in the murder raised some extremely disturbing questions. For example, why was Bijan sent back to a volatile and dangerous situation? And why was nothing done to ensure his safety? As news of Bijan's murder swept through the area, newspapers such as The Sun began reporting on the rumours that were circulating about Bijan being a paedophile, despite the fact that it had been proven that he had done nothing wrong or inappropriate. Bijan's family were quick to refute these baseless rumours and allegations. They released a statement which read, "In the early morning hours of Sunday, July 14, our family had a brother, son, uncle, and beloved friend taken from us. Bijan was a quiet, disabled man whose only joys in life came from his horticultural interests and his cat. Bijan was a caring, loving, and unselfish man. He was an excellent uncle and a warm, supportive brother. Recent press coverage of Bijan's murder has been damning and distasteful and completely untrue." The following month, the Independent Police Complaints Commission announced that six officers had been served with notices of gross misconduct. Three of them were the officers who had been called to the estate and arrested Bijan, and they were also suspended by Avon and Somerset Police. These six officers had dealt with Bijan between the 11th of July and the 13th of July, and over the forthcoming weeks, they would be subject to criminal interviews. In addition, six civilian call handlers were going to be questioned as well to establish whether they treated Bijan's calls for help with due seriousness. In October, Lee pleaded guilty to the murder of Bijan, while Stephen admitted to assisting an offender. In court, he briefly explained that they had taken the law into their own hands. The sentencing phase would be to follow. Following his court appearance, Avon and Somerset Police once again reiterated that Bijan was an innocent man. Martin Dunscombe, a spokesman, said, "We can categorically state he had not taken any indecent images and that nothing of concern had been found on his computer." While the murder was still being investigated, it had sparked much debate and even confusion as to how something so horrific could have transpired. Nick Gargan, Chief Constable of Avon and Somerset Police, echoed the sentiment of most of the locals when he said that the city had failed Bijan and that he was struggling to understand how something could happen in such a tolerant city. Speaking of Bijan, he said, "He was terribly misunderstood by the community and something should have been done to put this right. Who can say why he was being picked on? He was different, disabled, and Iranian." It was easy to reach the conclusion that far too many people believed that the main problem with this tragic murder was that Bijan was actually innocent, and that he had not taken any inappropriate photographs of children. By this point, mob justice directed against alleged paedophiles had become the norm, and as soon as somebody is labelled a paedophile, whether they are innocent or guilty, their life is essentially doomed. There had been a plethora of vigilante-style incidents in Britain wherein anonymous online paedophile hunters attempt to name and shame suspected paedophiles. While these online paedophile hunters had led to a handful of convictions, they had also destroyed the lives of many innocent people who were hounded out of their communities due to false claims. Earlier in the year, 29-year-old Gary Clearly hanged himself after being confronted by such a group. In the wake of the murder, a lot of people were left wondering whether Bijan had have been guilty of what he was accused. Would that make the murder any less horrific? Would that have warranted him being beaten and set on fire? In modern-day Britain, some people certainly believed so. While paedophilia is a legitimate fear, the word paedophile is an insult thrown around far too easily. Moral outrage is legitimate, but moral panic can be dangerous. As Peter Davies, the Director of Child Exploitation and Online Abuse Protection at the National Crime Agency, said, Vigilantes often think that they are doing the right thing, when they're not. But in this particular murder, I don't really see any point where the people involved thought they were doing a just or righteous thing on behalf of the community. Reported hate crimes against people with disabilities has long been rising, and it is fanned by rhetoric against them. According to studies that were conducted around the same time as Bijan's murder, at least 8 in 10 people with learning difficulties have been the victim of verbal assaults, and the word pedo or pedophile is a regular term of abuse thrown at them. Tragically, people with disabilities are often unable to work, and are therefore placed in the poorest and most fractured communities, which in turn puts them at greater risk of abuse or even violence. Back at Capgrave Crescent, bloodlust had turned to penance, and nobody had a bad word to say about Bijan. However, there wasn't a shortage of witnesses who could corroborate the level of vitriol that he had been subjected to as police led him from his apartment. A black cloud of tension and guilt hovered over the community, and while Lee and Stephen acted alone in the physical murder, they were far from the only guilty parties. Speaking with the Daily Telegraph, one woman living in the area said that she and her family were so disturbed by the murder that they were moving house. She said, "There were lots of neighbours out there watching, and the man was screaming, but nobody did anything. People in that block stuck together and kept silent." While there were, of course, a lot of neighbours that didn't take part in the abuse, there was not one person who had the courage to intervene or defend Bijan from the months of abuse and bullying. Before we get on with the rest of the episode, I'd like to take a second to talk about today's sponsor, What Happened Podcast. This podcast is hosted by friends Owen and Ryan, and in each episode, they offer a satirical spin on the history genre. They focus on some of the more obscure historical occurrences, so expect to hear some stories that you've never heard before. From sunken ships to medieval LSD, Owen and Ryan cover a different historical event each episode, and comedy and satire is sprinkled through each episode. My personal favourite episode is the most recent episode on Mongolian death boxes. The episodes are well written and well presented, and it feels like you're chatting with two friends. Two friends who know what they're talking about. While you're listening to this episode of Morbidology, click the link to What Happened in my show notes and make sure to subscribe. Towards the end of October, Bijan's family called for the police to answer to the failures that led to his murder. In a statement, his family said, "It should not be forgotten that Bijan had been the victim of hate crimes for a number of years before his death, both due to his race and his physical disability. It was for this reason that the police should have taken especially seriously the calls for help in the days before he was murdered." The racism that Bijan had experienced was conflated with the fear of paedophilia, and it made for an extremely toxic environment. Shortly thereafter, the police and crime commissioner called for a public meeting to reveal the findings of the independent investigation and inquiries surrounding the murder of Bijan. On the 27th of November, Lee James was sentenced to life in prison, with a minimum of 18 years. When handing down the sentence, Judge Peregrine Simon said, "The circumstances of the murder of Bijan Ebrahimi and the subsequent burning of his body are deeply shocking. You decided wrongly that he was a paedophile and that this put him outside the law. You thought you were entitled to take the law into your own hands. What you did had nothing to do with law or justice. The law protects life. This was an act of murderous injustice." At the court hearing, police once again apologised for failing to protect Bijan. Chief Constable Nick Garton said, "Mr. Ebrahimi was someone who deserved the protection of all of us, and we are very sorry about what happened to him." Stephen, who pleaded guilty to assisting an offender, was sentenced to just 4 years in prison. Bijan's sister, Maniza Murray's, read out a victim impact statement, which read in part, "When Bijan was brutally murdered on 14th of July 2013, our lives changed forever. There are no words on this earth that can describe the emptiness we feel. Part of us died with him. 3 or 4 times a week, my sister drives to Brislington, sits in her car, and cries. Bijan's young nephews have been deeply affected and have needed to seek counselling. On Sundays, Bijan's chair is empty. Burning Bijan's body took away the opportunity for us to pay our respects to our brother, as we could not view his body before he was laid to rest. To us, this felt like Bijan was murdered twice. The loss of Bijan has left a hole in our lives that we can never fill. Our life will never be the same again." With the sentences handed down, more information regarding the run-up to Bijan's murder would be revealed. It was announced that just hours before Bijan was murdered, he had emailed the community beat manager, which was a police officer for Avon and Somerset Police, and begged him for help. He stated that he did not feel safe in his own home. However, the message was not read until after Bijan was murdered. It was further revealed that Bijan had taken photographs and videos of his neighbours from his own property when they were doing antisocial things, which made him fear for his own safety. He had been gathering evidence which he could then show to police to corroborate his fears. He had been trying to move out of the council estate and into a new area where he felt welcome and safe. In January of 2014, the Independent Police Complaints Commission said that they were widening their investigation into the treatment of Bijan and looking at the contact he had with police over the course of several years, not just the run-up to the murder. Bijan's reports to police of harassment as well as racial and physical abuse had begun as early as 2007. Then just the following month, they announced that they were renewing their appeal in finding witnesses who knew anything about Bijan's mistreatment or his murder. In June, it was announced that a further 4 police officers were being investigated over how they handled the case. In December, it was revealed that 3 police constables and a police community support worker would be charged over the treatment of Bijan. Officers Kevin Duffy, Helen Harris, and Leanne Winter were all charged with misconduct in public office for failing to respond to calls for help for Bijan. Police community support worker Andrew Passmore was charged with misconduct in public office for giving false information to the 999 operator that he was outside Bijan's house at an important time. He was also charged with perverting the course of justice for giving different accounts to the investigation. They would be standing trial the following year. In November of 2015, the 4 police officers stood trial. Bristol Crown Court was told that the 4 officers had let their dislike of Bijan influence their approach to what was very evidently a toxic situation. After Lee had barged into Bijan's apartment on the 11th of July, Bijan called police. He explained that he had been assaulted and said that there was a racial problem. The call was logged as a hate crime and categorised as a grade 1 incident, which meant that an immediate response was needed. The response certainly was speedy, and 3 officers arrived at the scene. Bijan explained the situation and explained that Lee had threatened him. According to the prosecutor, it was evident by Lee's behaviour when the officers arrived that Lee was thinking of taking the law into his own hands. He had even told the officers that he was prepared to go to prison to protect his children. In fact, the officers had even heard Lee threatening to murder Bijan, yet did nothing about it. Outside the apartment, a crowd had gathered and they were all hurling insults at Bijan. Despite this, it was Bijan who ended up getting chastised by the three officers and then arrested.
For second time, he came to me and treating me to die.
Get in.
You are coming
you
here
are
to
making
look
it worse.
After
now
me.
Now get inside.
Later on, when they brought Bijan back to the estate, they didn't bother to dispel the rumours, but instead, they told Lee that Bijan was taking photographs of the children outside. Lee muttered, "I knew it," and marched off. Just the following day, a desperate Bijan made 12 phone calls to police in the hopes that the local police beat manager, Kevin Duffy, whose job it was to tackle antisocial behaviour, would deal with his complaints against Lee.
What's going on right now?
Right now, a few of the neighbours outside and shouting and calling me paedophile.
We'll get someone to you as soon as they're available, okay?
According to the prosecution, it was evident that Officer Duffy did not like Bijan and had even referred to him as a perpetual liar. It was revealed that he was asked numerous times to check up on Bijan, but he refused and disregarded Bijan as a nuisance. On one occasion, Officer Duffy asked Officer Passmore, whose role it was to protect vulnerable people, to patrol the area around the apartments. Officer Passmore claimed that he had spent 40 minutes on foot patrol on the estate and another 20 minutes in the surrounding area. However, it was revealed that this was not true. He simply drove around the area once in his patrol vehicle. On another occasion, Officer Winter refused to take a phone call from Bijan because she was too busy eating a pot noodle and asked the 999 operator to say that she was busy on a job. On the 13th of July, Bijan had attempted once more to speak to Officer Duffy, but this time, his pleas were once again ignored.
Even at Sunset Police, how can I help?
Good afternoon. My name is Bijan Ibrahim. Can I speak to the PC Kevin Duffy? I'm expecting him, and I've got a mob outside my door.
Okay, let me see if I can call him for you. One moment, please.
Can you ask him when he's going to come, because I don't feel safe? Is he coming or not? That's all what I want to ask him.
During the trial, 12 of the phone calls that Bijan had made to police were played out. One of the phone calls had been placed by Bijan as he stood outside the police station and asked them to let him in. When he was told that there was nobody available to speak to him, he said, "I can't go home. I'm not safe there." At one point, the dispatch officer called Officer Duffy to see if he would go outside to speak to Bijan, to which he replied, "I've been dealing with him for years, and he's got nothing he needs to actually speak to me about." At another part of the phone call, Officer Duffy told the dispatch officer, "I'm tied up and I really don't care if he gets very, very cross. He got nicked last night. He makes a lot of people really cross."
I've got Bijan Ibrahimi.
Bijan Ibrahimi. I'm not talking to that man tonight. I'm involved with Log 656. I'm sorry, I'm going to go off in a second because I've had repeat calls from this man. I am considering doing Mr. Ibrahimi for harassment if he keeps on calling.
In another phone call, Bijan told the operator, "I can't even open my window because all the time they are laughing at me and they are, you know, telling something nasty to me." In a later phone call, Bijan begged, "I've got a mob outside my door. My life is in danger. Could you please come?" A video was also presented from when Bijan was in police custody.
Do whatever
you want. What part of be quiet do you not understand? Shut up!
No, I'm talking to you as a friend.
No, you're not my friend, that's the point. I'm a police officer, you're a pain in the ass. Don't speak to me.
In the video, Officer Harris accuses Bijan of antagonising his neighbours by taking photographs and videos of them before putting her hand up and telling him that she was totally bored of it and telling him, "Don't talk to me." At one point in the video, Bijan said, "I'm talking to you as a friend," to which she replied, "No, you're not my friend. That's the point. I'm a police officer and you're a pain in the ass. Don't speak to me. It was revealed during trial that Bijan had complained to police about harassment for a number of years, but he'd been categorised in official police logs as a repeat complainer, as well as antagonistic and troublemaking. Officer Duffy had dealt with a lot of the prior complaints. In one complaint, Bijan said that he had been punched in a racially motivated attack outside of a pub. And in another, he said that he'd been racially abused in a shop. Both Officer Duffy and Officer Passmore were convicted of misconduct, while Officer Harris and Officer Winter were cleared. They were released on bail, awaiting sentencing, which would follow the following year. Sue Mount Stevens, the Avon and Somerset Police and Crime Commissioner, said, "It is clear that on this occasion, the police failed local people and let down a vulnerable man in his own home. This should never have happened." Officer Duffy was sentenced to 10 months in prison and Officer Passmore was sentenced to 4 months. In 2017, the Independent Police Complaints Commission said that the police officers had showed hallmarks of racial bias in their ruling, which revealed a catalogue of failures. In the report, they criticised the poor responses of the police and suggested that the police officers had displayed signs of racism. It was revealed that between 2007 and his murder, Bijan had made 85 calls to Avon and Somerset Police to report a variety of crimes, including racial abuse, criminal damage, and threats to kill him. He had his home and his car set on fire, and on one occasion, the word pervert had been painted on his front door. In 40 of these instances, police had failed to record the crimes. Jan Williams, an independent police complaints commissioner, said that Bijan had been failed on a number of levels for a number of years. She additionally said that his complaints were disbelieved by the police, and he was considered to be a liar, a nuisance, and an attention seeker. Investigators found a frequent and persistent failure of police to report the crimes being committed against Bijan, despite his polite and ultimately futile persistence in requesting their help.
No matter how many times he was rebuffed, mocked, dismissed, dealt with contempt, he never lost faith and trust in Avon and Somerset Police. And that is the most poignant, salutary lesson for Avon and Somerset Police. He kept faith with them. They let him down every step of the way, and they let him down so badly that final weekend.
The report stated that it was very likely that the perpetrators of the offences against Bijan believed that they could act with impunity towards Bijan. In fact, they found that one of the police officers had accused Bijan of lying and playing the race card. One incident from Bijan had been recorded with a description which read, "Informant is foreign and very difficult to understand." It was further uncovered that Bijan had told police that Lee had headbutted him after barging into his apartment, and one of the officers told Lee, "Off the record, I would have done the same thing." The IPCC ended the report by stating that Avon and Somerset Police were institutionally responsible for Bijan's death. The lead investigator, John Shimmick, said, "Unfortunately, only his murder uncovered the fact that he was wrongly and unjustifiably being treated by the police as a liar when the evidence showed that he was the victim. Had his allegations in earlier years been recorded and investigated properly, the truth of what he was enduring may have been discovered, and consequently, his murder may have been prevented." The report revealed that Bijan's neighbours' counter-allegations were taken at face value and accepted by police, despite the fact that there was evidence to the contrary. Bijan found himself regarded as the perpetrator of the abuse rather than the victim. The investigation found that the police had treated Bijan consistently different than his neighbours without any reasonable explanation as to why. The report stated some of the evidence has hallmarks of what could be construed as racial bias, conscious or unconscious.
We accept that we failed Bijan Ebrahimi at his time of greatest need, and throughout that time he was respectful and he had confidence and trust in us, the police, and we let him down, and for that we are sorry.
Following the report, it was revealed that the Bristol City Council were going to be examined in how they dealt with Bijan. It was revealed that at one point during Bijan's dispute with his neighbours, Bristol City Council took out an anti-social behaviour order against Bijan, and the order had been supported by Officer Duffy. This order required Bijan to stop being disorderly. He had successfully appealed against the order and had it overturned when he could prove that he was not doing the things that he was being accused of doing. It was further revealed that Bijan had asked Bristol City Council on a weekly and sometimes even daily basis to find him a new home. The role of the council was now going to be subject to what is known as a multi-agency learning review, which was commissioned by the Safer Bristol Partnership. Following the revelation, one woman, who declined to be named, told the BBC that the full extent of Bijan's abuse had not been publicised. She said that he frequently received death threats, his cat was even abused by his neighbours, and he had faeces left on his doorstep. She said that no action was ever taken. In fact, the more incidents that Bijan reported, the more ingrained the pattern of responses became. The independent review would find that much like the police, the Bristol City Council had wrongly perceived Bijan as a troublemaker rather than a victim, and chose to believe his abusers, and ultimately his killers, over him. The review also found that institutional racism had a large part to play. Institutional racism is described as the collective failure of an organisation to provide an appropriate and professional service to people because of their colour, culture, or ethnic origin. It can be seen or detected in the processes, attitudes, and behaviour which amount to discrimination through unwitting prejudice, ignorance, thoughtlessness, and racist stereotyping, which disadvantage minority ethnic people. Bijan's sisters said that it was important that their concerns had finally been officially recognised. They stated, "Bijan always fought for the truth, which is what we have tried to do in his name. He never gave up on trying to make things better, and neither will we. It's been a long battle. No review can ever bring back our beloved Bijan, but it is important that his voice has been heard. Bijan always said that racism must be challenged wherever it is found, including in town halls and police stations."
Reading that report, it was devastating. It was so hard to see Bijan all these years been suffering and his voice never listened to.
He always thought that he is in a country that police is there to protect people.
This is the way Bijan was. He always kept his faith in the policing and he never lost his trust in them. But unfortunately, they didn't recognise that. They didn't recognise his needs.
The vigilante murder of Bijan Ebrahimi was an act of savagery, almost unthinkable in modern-day Britain. It was a chilling reminder that even the mention of the word paedophile can incite a moral outrage in the most unrestrained form. It can turn seemingly regular people into a lynch mob that feels justified in meting out the most grim of punishments. One of the biggest tragedies of the case is that Bijan had contacted police, and he trusted that those hired to protect him and lay down the law would do just that. Instead, however, Bijan was abandoned to face injustice on his own, and ultimately, it cost him his life. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to take a second to say a massive thank you to my new Patreon supporters, Michael O'Connor and Margaret Tidwell. The support on Patreon truly helps out. It helps to defray the costs of freedom of information requests, archive subscriptions, hosting, and much more. In return, you get monthly exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, early release episodes, ad-free episodes, true crime articles, and you can even request a case for me to cover on the podcast. You can also sign up annually and get 15% off. Big thank you to everybody who has simply listened to an episode as well. The support is very much appreciated. If you didn't know already, I have a new investigative true crime series, which came out on the 23rd of November. It's called The Shattered Window and uncovers an unsolved murder as well as a wrongful conviction over the course of 10 episodes. Please make sure to subscribe wherever you're listening. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.